All right, great to see so many of you tonight on another really cold night. So thank you everybody for coming out. I want to thank our sponsors for the evening, Dean and Daniel Heiss, Sarah and Simcha Yenowitz, Judith and Daniel Zucker, and Jan and David Rohrer. I want to thank, as usual, the B'chol Nafshecha committee continues to help us bring meaningful speakers in to help us think about these really important conversations that are really important to have. We were talking, as we do always every summer, about who to bring, what topics we could bring to the community this year, and Rabbi Hurwitz was right at the top of our list. I personally have had a number of opportunities to hear Rabbi Hurwitz, and I'm really just feel very glad that we have the opportunity to have him. I'm not going to read the entire, Hurwitz asked me not to give a hesped this evening, so we won't do that. But suffice to say that Rabbi Hurwitz is the founding Dean of Yeshiva Darchei Noam in Muncie, has received a number of prestigious awards for his work for the Jewish community. He published a book, which you probably have seen by Art School, called Let's Stay Safe, which was a groundbreaking child safety book, which is in 155,000 homes in three different languages. And a Bright Beginnings Gemara and Chumash workbook, which also is now in over 100 schools throughout the country. So many thousands of parents watch Rabbi Hurwitz's clips on Instagram and different places. Rabbi Hurwitz serves as a senior family support mentor and educational consultant at Kesher Families. We had the opportunity to have Rabbi Dina Penner here last year, so you know what Kesher Family does for families raising LGBTQ children. And Rabbi Hurwitz is also a guide to a lot of rabbis and mechanchim who call him when they themselves are dealing with challenging situations, trying to help families navigate all kinds of situations. And it's really just an honor and a privilege to welcome Rabbi Yaakov Hurwitz. I'll say also that Rabbi Hurwitz, you can stand up. Rabbi Hurwitz has offered us, we're recording tonight, and also we will email out the PowerPoint afterwards. Rabbi Hurwitz has offered us to do that, so you don't have to worry, and if you don't have to take notes tonight, we'll have opportunities to send it out afterwards.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I wonder what the hesped sounds like. Thank you very much, Rabbi. Thank you. Thank you all. Welcome. Thanks for coming out on a cold night. You have an important topic. It's tell me anything. That's my term. That's not a, you won't find it in the literature, but it's just how I think about this, which is to position yourself that your children can come to you when they really need to talk. And I think it's, honestly, it's one of the best gifts that you can give your kids, is to have that type of relationship. And if you weren't raised this way, so it's thinking a little bit differently, I got a Medicare card a year ago, so trust me, my teachers and my amazing parents, we did none of that stuff. But I think it's really important that we do. And I'm going to talk to you about how to get there and what I think we can do to really make it happen. So let's just go right. I'm sorry. Let me just. This just spoke to me, because iceberg. Most of it's underground, underwater. Excuse me. And this stuff that's going. The underwater stuff is what they really need your help with, and especially with technology. I just posted on social media two different posts today. It's at Yaakov Hurwitz, by the way, and I was an 8th grade Rebbe for 15 years, so you can check your phones while I'm talking. I won't get distracted at all. Don't worry. But I just posted today. I said, if how many of you know more? We can try it here. How many of you know more about technology than your kids? Anyone? Wow. One. You work in the tech business? There you go. Okay. You should give a talk. Okay. I got one. Two. Okay. Also in the tech business? There you go. So think about it this way. If your kids have these phones right in front of you and they know much more than you do, how are you going to supervise them? How are you going to be able to talk? How will they be able to communicate with you about it if they start getting in trouble? So it's really important. I think in today's environment, if you're not doing this, it's almost impossible to really guard your kids, especially when they need it most. So let's just do some case studies The rabbi said, I'll be sending this around to you, so a lot of, there's some research citations and other things that you might want to look up. So, high school boy's having a crisis of faith. He says, I don't really believe what they're teaching me in yeshiva. That's honestly, compared to some of the other things, that might be a little mild, but it's something that people carry around and would not be comfortable telling, might not be comfortable telling their parents. This is a biggie, okay? A child, young man or woman, is, God forbid, being groomed or abused. You know, there was most of the high-profile arrests for child sexual abuse happened, it got started, when a child told their parents. I was personally involved with two schools over the last 2 years. I think the schools handled it magnificently, which is a prerequisite for me to get involved. But they really did a great job. In both cases, a child told the parent. Imagine how uncomfortable that is. An adult, if we were, God forbid, think of if something happened to us that we really weren't comfortable, I mean, how many people would we talk to? So for a child to, and the abusers count on the kids not talking. So we really, this is another reason. All but two boys in my class are vaping. Okay, that's another mild one. But it's something that they would like to talk to parents about. A corollary to that is that it's important to have updated information. It's okay to say you don't know, just go find out. Because a lot of the things that attitudes, let's say, to marijuana or other substances, the kids consider basically like a cigarette. And they'll give you all kinds of arguments. Vaping is more safe than cigarettes. Marijuana is much safer than alcohol. You ever someone to die of a marijuana overdose, right? They come throw things at you and it just starts whirling around. But it starts with being able to have this discussion. But this was a biggie. I still remember the family. Their parents brought a child to me a few years ago. And the kid was just a wonderful young man. And he was tanking completely. Parents didn't know what was going on. They sent him to therapists. And for some reason, I really try to project an image that I'm approachable. Not an easy thing to do. And by the way, parents, that's another thing to think about in terms of this. To project, are you projecting to your children that you're approachable? I went to, when I started my Instagram page, there's a wonderful young man in Israel who's he does marketing for and branding for, you know, Fortune 500 companies, and he offered to give me free service. So hey, I went to him, and when I started my Instagram page, he said, "Okay, Rabbi, what's the first thing you want people to think when you see a page?" So I said, "Approachable." So he looked at it. All the pictures were me in a white shirt or the way I'm dressed now. He said, I wouldn't have talked to that guy. I promise you. Look at my page now. 80% of the pictures, I'm in casual clothing. Okay, I didn't do it till I stepped down from my yeshiva, honestly. I stepped down from my yeshiva 7-8 years ago. So I started, I had a Twitter, and I didn't use it that much. But this child never, the kid was gay. He was 16 years old. He had never told a soul. I wonder that he told me. I was honored that he did. I told him, I'm safe. You can ask anyone. I don't talk. And he just blurted it out. He said, Rebbe, I'm gay. Who knows about it? No one. Nobody? Told your parents? No. And this kid was suffering for years because he was afraid to say anything. And understandably so. I mean, I'm not making a value judgment. But I like many parts of Yiddishkeit. I'm not giving up my phone on Shabbos. Again, something that we would want our children to be able to discuss with us. And they can't access that information if they're not comfortable disclosing to us. Now, obviously, there's a good reason that people don't disclose to their parents. So we're going to talk about the barriers, but I absolutely, with every fiber in my body, believe that it's very doable. It requires, if you're not there right now, you'll get there if you want to, but it just requires a little shift of thinking. I'm going to step back a bit and talk a little bit about adolescence, because what I really want to, the reason I'm doing this is because I want to encourage you to, I call it looking for the answer key. If you see things that don't make sense, that's how my brain works. Like, let's say this child, this kid, I didn't know what was wrong with him, but I just sensed that there was something there that he wasn't telling. The parents told me, and you know, it's just the blanks. I just felt that there was something there, and I usually try to, again, I call it the answer key. I'm going to encourage you to, we'll take this as an example, some facets, features of adolescence, okay? Why are they so contradictory in nature? Okay? They volunteer to work developmentally disabled kids that can be so self-absorbed at the same time, sometimes within the same 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I had an adorable situation. The Hasidic fellow called me up a while back that his son, he says, I have a 17-year-old kid, he's a great kid, and he asked me to go to the car show in the Javits Center. And this father, the dad took him, and it was really outside the dad's comfort zone to be there. But he went, and on the way back, his son was telling him, he knew every name of every fancy car, and the father said the reason he took him is because he knows how car crazy he is. Every time they go in the street, oh, it's a new model, you see, like, well, right? And the father didn't know what was flying. So he took him to the car show. And on the way back home, the kid's telling his father how he wants to learn in Kollel for at least 10 years. And the kid's a serious learner. And the father called me up. He says, Rav Yankel, he says, Yiddish, he says, Dus verstaich und dus verstaich. I understand that. You love cars. I understand loving being Kollel. But this and that, he says, Dus verstaich, this I understand. He was really cute. Dus verstaich und dus verstaich. Oh, but Dussen days zusammen, these two I don't get together. Okay, I said, what did you tell him? And I told him, I'm standing up for you. He didn't say a word. He wanted to ask him, how do you think you're going to swing Kolo? He was talking about getting the Tesla with the wings, you know, doors come up like that. And he wanted to buy one. He was telling his father he's going to work and pay him more. I don't know, whatever. So how are you going to swing this? The father didn't say a word. Okay, but we get this all the time. They are extremely contradictory. It's a great title. It's an old book, but it's still, I read it again a couple of years ago. Look at that. Could you please, for those who aren't in the front, get out of my life, but could you please drive me and Cheryl to the mall? Okay, so that's it's a great book. It's an excellent book if you want to learn about adolescence. Anthony Wilford. And it's just such a perfect thing, right? Get out of my life. Don't talk to me. And all of a sudden, boom. This is a real note the mom sent to me. She was volunteering to serve lunch in school. And the kid, her 9-year-old daughter says, rules for lunch. No kissing, no blowing a kiss, no talking to me. You're just here to say hi. Exclamation point. Adorable. And the mother said, like, she felt like she was on parole. She wasn't able to look at the door. Hi. You know, okay. So, but we find this all the time. Another thing, they're so erratic in terms of relationships. They're pushing, it's similar to before. The other one is about it being altruistic and selfish, but this is another thing. One of the things that drive us crazy about adolescence is that there's so many mood swings, sometimes in the same 10 minutes, and it really is enough to drive you batty. So my daughter and I were always close. Now she's generally distant, randomly gets affectionate, then it's back to hands off. It drives me crazy. One way, what often happens in a scenario is your 15-year-old daughter, Friday afternoon, you're trying to get her to help in the kitchen, and you beg, please, go, yeah, sure, Ma, I'll be right with you, Ma, just 1 second, right, yeah. And she's not there, you're really not happy about it at the moment. And then right after candle lighting or after dinner, you know, she, oh, Mom, I love you so much, you know, so, you know, and you just want to say, where were you all day, right? So you get this, so those are just two features of adolescence. What I'd like to show you is how each of these are normal, predictable, and there's a lot of research to support reasons for this. See, I taught adolescents, 22 years old, right out of the gate. My first students from that year are 55. I have a spine condition, so I moved to Florida half the year, 5 years ago. I can't really do cold anymore. On a regular basis. So one of my students actually moved into my building. He's 55 and older. I'm not kidding. My first students are 55, okay? Okay? So you see these features. There's an answer key. It makes sense. Let's go through these two, okay? So there's a Dr. Lev Vygotsky who came up with this idea a long time ago, and he said, he passed in 1934, he was in the early 1900s, he said that this erratic behavior of going to Kollel and having a car, it actually makes perfect sense, because adolescents are learning about life. This kid would like to go to Kollel, and he would like to have the Tesla with the wings, you know? He wants both, and he's trying to figure it out. Here's another way of thinking about it. You have a colleague, you have a friend, and he or she tried 5 different diets in the last 6 months. So yeah, make up your mind, take one. No, I'm trying to figure out what works for me. So he's trying out the Kollel thing, and he's trying out the car show. Makes perfect sense. He says, these are crucial steps of human development. They analyze previous experience and character traits and decides which one they want to embody. So this behavior, which absolutely drives us batty, is actually predictable. Once you know about it, I got it. Now, because I taught adolescents, you know, I was constantly reading research and stuff. Like, you would see things and, hey, this makes sense. Why do they do this business with the random affection and that? So it's called refueling, recharging. There are different clinical terms that are used for this, but and you know, slang to describe it. The kids are starting their own lives. And both of these, by the way, are relevant to the Tell Me Anything, because it's really about understanding your kids, especially your tweens and teens, which is when, you know, Tell Me Anything you don't need when the kid's 3 years old. You know, it's when they hit adolescence. So I'm encouraging you to look for an answer key. If it doesn't make sense, now you got AI, just punch it in and see what comes out. You have any behavior that you're thinking about. I'm going to take questions later. I'll be glad to discuss it with you. But if you have questions that don't make sense, that your kids are doing things that doesn't seem, you might have a great answer. The children need separation. If they cannot stay attached to us, we don't want them to. But at the same time, they're not ready to start their lives. They need someone to take them to the mall, right? So they need the anchoring. We need to give it to them. And they're pushing off a lot of times. Another way to think about a 2-3-year-old in the playground. You take them to the playground, they run away, they're playing with their friends. All of a sudden, they turn around, they come over to you, they grab your thigh, and they give you a big hug, and you love it. And then they just squirt out and go back to their friends. Like, hey, whoa. So what's the logic? By the way, you can look that up too. You can look it up now. Feel free to. 2-3 is called terrible twos. Why is it called terrible twos? Because the kids start saying no. Why? Because that's the first phase in their life where they start separating. Where they start, you know, till then they basically pick them up, put them down, put them in the back seat, you know. And all of a sudden they start going out a little. So kid goes out, gets frightened. A lot of people I don't know here. Oh, mom's here, dad's here. They come over to give you a hug. Now remember, this has nothing to do with your rhythm, what you want at that time. It's what they need. So they grab you and then they're off. So here are two things that really make sense. And there's tons of research. Again, I'll send, you have the PowerPoint, feel free to look it up. That self-confidence actually leads to better parenting. That's why it's so important to study parenting, because we get rattled when we have things like these that we don't understand. We get rattled by it. And it's understandable that we do, I encourage you to think about always looking for an answer key if you see things that don't make sense. This is my own thing. Again, this is a Yankee, not a research, but think about it. We would all know if we got an electric shock, we took a shower, you know, we washed up and we touched a plug, an outlet, we got an electric shock, we would know right away what happened. So we have pain and right away say, dry your hands, Yankee, what are you doing? Okay? If a person from a third world country was staying in your house and did the same thing, they would have the same pain you did, but it doesn't make sense to them. So maybe they'll think that every Sunday at 8:25, they're going to get zapped again. Or they'll start thinking about sins that happened to them, that you know, God's punishing them for something or else. Lots of times when people tell me about adolescent behavior, they say things that somebody told them, the big guilt thing, you know, how it's a shame, you know, they're punishing you. People tell me this. I wasn't nice to my grandmother, and they're teenagers. What they're doing is adolescent behavior. So not only does increased knowledge help you, it also gives you self-confidence because you understand what's going on. This is another thing I would just like to encourage you. I'm going to jump in right now into the tell me anything. But I in my classes, I generally do theory and practice. If you only do theory and I tell you, let's say Lev Vygotsky said this and that one said that, without going into practice, if you only do theory, then people don't relate to it. But if all you do is practice and you go to people, what should I do in this situation? I encourage you to try to find out why also, because it will empower you a lot rather than just being taught. Okay, so let's get to this. So tell me anything is a concept based on the notion that we can try to set up a system with our children that they're comfortable disclosing to us and seeking our guidance when they need it most, which means when they're in trouble. You know, say in Russia, there used to be some are in jail, just got out of jail, or just about to go in jail. There's like three categories. So like either making trouble, just finished making trouble, about to make trouble. That's when they need us most, when they need this. I don't know, I'm a visual guy. I took this picture driving on I-70 near Vail, Colorado. This is a runaway truck ramp. The trucks, if they you ever see they say go into low gear, that slows them down. If not, they just use the brakes. They burn the brakes out. Could you imagine 80,000 pound truck hurtling down on an incline like this? So they made these off ramps. So that's all soft gravel. So the truckers go off. And they don't even usually get halfway up that, even though how fast they're going. It kills the truck, but at least they walk away from it. And I like to think of that this tell me anything is just an off-ramp. It's a way to get your kids safely out of bad situations or about to get into bad situations. I love this one. I need your love most when I'm most difficult to love, right? And that's when they need us desperately. Along the lines of thinking, this was an article that I wrote about Purim a number of years ago. I've been posting it, variations of this since. It's kind of counterintuitive the way, if you were raised in an authoritarian home or like an old style parenting, this idea of having the kids talk to you, like, really? Like, how does that work? So you try to find a blend. I spent 20 years begging parents, adults, not to give alcohol to kids on Purim. But one year I just thought, I said, you know, Yanky, there's no balance here. So I wrote an article begging parents to tell the kids before they leave the house, sweetheart, you know we don't want you drinking. And we're going to be really upset if you do. But if you're out there and you're toasted, call us and we'll pick you up without any questions. We will not discuss it with you for 24 hours, for 48 hours. There'll be consequences, we'll talk about it later, but you don't need to worry about not coming home, because what happens? I know children, very, very sadly, that died because they were toasted. Not only on Purim, they couldn't come home for 6 hours, so they sleep on somebody's lawn, they get into a car with someone who's you know, under the influence, and horrible things happen because they're afraid to call. So even though it sounds contradictory, this is what I tell the parents. I encourage parents to say this. Your life matters more than my rules. So that's the balance about this mindset about tell me anything. It's a kind of a hybrid where you say, look, you know what we want you to do and we don't want you to do. But if you're doing things that you think we wouldn't be happy with, please tell us. Please tell us. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it, sweetheart. We'll figure it out and we'll get through it, but I'd like you to come talk to us. So that's the balance. Like, you know, how could you tell somebody, I'll pick you up, if you say, you know, don't you dare drink on Purim? So he said, we don't want you drinking, but your life is more important than my rules. I found that to be very impactful. Rav Schwab Zatzal, I was fortunate, I taught three of his grandchildren when I was an eighth grade Rebbe, Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal from the Washington Heights community. He said at his grandson's bar mitzvah, he turned to his grandson, he says, the first time the Torah uses the word friend is by the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda had sinned and he was very embarrassed. And he was comfortable telling, it says that he gave the items that disclosed his sin to Re'ehu Adulami, his friend. That's Rav Schwab says, the Torah, because Rav Schwab turned to his grandson, it was very impactful to me as a young parent and a young educator. He said, a good friend is someone you can tell anything to, and I want you to be a good friend to your friends. That's what he told his grandson. That's it. So he said the Torah crowned this non-Jewish person with the title of Re'ehu because Yehuda was comfortable confiding in him. My asterisk there, that was Rav Schwab's Zatzal, but that wasn't a family member, right? He had lots of, which highlights the complexity, right? So he could have gone to his brothers, but that's the way it is. So let's be honest, we have a barrier right away that that it's going to be more difficult for us. So this is a template. People who are experts talk about the personal growth and change. How do you change? We just passed New Year's. How do you make your New Year's resolutions last, more than a couple of weeks? So this is a template that a lot of experts talk about. I will, something that I'm going to do, I'm going to drop 20 pounds because it's healthy, therefore I'm going to join a gym. I will spend more time with my family because it's extremely important, therefore I'm going to, leave work every day, 2 days a week early and, try to not pick up my phone when I'm with the kids. So this is an example. I'm going to soon do this for, I want my kids to be able to talk to me. So let's do a sample first here. So this is, I will make our home a place where our kids love to hang out in. Okay? Again, the next one's going to be, I want my kids to be able to talk to me, which is what we're talking about tonight. But this is just a sample, okay? Because they'll be safer that way. We'll get to know their friends. So let's say you set that up as a value for your home. You sit there, you talk it over, you think about it, and you say, this is something we'd really like to have in our home. Okay? We will make our home a place where kids love to hang out in. Why? Because they'll be safer. We'll know where they are. We'll get to know their friends. Okay? And I remember, in our own home once, our oldest, it was a winter of Matzah Shabbos, and my wife is an artist. She's incredibly talented. She's also incredibly organized, which I've never been accused of. And, she likes everything, just said I do my very best to accommodate and try to make. So it was like 11 o'clock, winter night. Kids had a long time at home, and I was walking up the steps with my wife, and she says, my son yells upstairs, he was 10, 12, 13 maybe. He said, Ma, I got a great pasta recipe. The kitchen was spotless. My wife started like tense up. She was one step on top. We were literally going up to close the door for the night. By the way, I never, ever went to sleep until every child was home. And I didn't lecture them, but I went to sleep on the couch. I never, ever, ever went upstairs till every child was home. And they would say, no, you don't have to. It's not necessary. Sweetheart, I hope you'll do this with my grandkids. But it wasn't in their face. But I'm just saying. Okay? So my wife's ahead of me on the steps. And I she started like tensing up. And I went up to the step next to her. I whispered in it and I said, sweetheart, if you say no, he's going to ask for the car keys. And like, okay. That was the end of that. So that's what it means, right? You want your kids to stay home. It's going to cost you stuff. So what's it going to cost you? We'll get to that later because I want to use this to extrapolate what's it going to cost you to have a tell-me-anything relationship. Okay, so here's the template. This is a value we have Here's the reason why we're doing it, and therefore, what are we going to do to make that happen? So, I'm sorry, I'm missing a word there. If you want your kids to tell you anything, one of your goals will be our home will be a place where our teens and tweens can talk to us about anything. Why and what are we doing about it? Okay? So, it'll make our relationship closer, more meaningful, and you can pick your own. But this is what I came up with. It'll help their personal safety. It's the only way we can guide, mentor them through their mistakes. Okay, so let's use that as a template. If you all came here, so you're interested in this idea, if you say, you go home and you say, I really would like to learn more about it. I would love to be able to do this at our home. I never said this in public. One of our children whispered it in my ear. One of our three daughters, just as we walked it down to the chuppah. I never said in public, don't ask me why I'm saying it now. Maybe the riddle in the water off, I'm not sure. But she whispered in my ear right before we walked down. She told my wife something else. And she said, Ta, I was always able to talk to you about anything. Thank you so much. Kids get it. Kids get it. It was an incredible moment. So we have this value. Here are some things why it's important to us. So let's just say we'll overcome the barriers that make our kids reluctant to confide in their parents. This is a pretty simple one, right? Let's spend some time, and I'm going to ask you for some input. Let's spend some time thinking about why kids wouldn't talk to their parents. And then just got to figure out how to exit off. Okay? Okay. Why wouldn't kids talk to their parents? I started you off. Number one, they're afraid of punishment. Go ahead, folks. You don't have to raise your hand. Blurt it out. Go ahead.
Embarrassment.
They're embarrassed, right? Okay, go ahead. So, afraid of punishment, they're embarrassed. They're going to get judged, right? Right? You're never going to yell, ah, really? Right? Okay, what else?
Disappointing.
They disappoint me, right? One of the kids I was working with, someone came to me and he told me that he was doing something very wrong in his parents. I told him, so why don't you tell your parents? He said, this one. He said it in this tone of voice, I promise. He said, my mother is such a nice lady. You know, you have had a great aunt that collected 300 paper bags. You know what I mean? Well, before your time, I had that. You know, like this nice old lady, but you know, like she doesn't get it, right? That's what she said. He said, whenever I do something, whenever I do something she doesn't like, she goes, and takes out a Tehillim and starts praying, I promise you. So he said, like, why should I bother her? You know, what am I going to do? Like, what's the point? That's what he told me. Okay, so they don't want to disappoint us. Well, they have embarrassment. They're going to get punished. You're going to change your house rules about where I can go once I tell you something, right? There's so many of them. Okay, so we're going to talk about taking this off, but let's go through this exercise again. Let's go back to the one that about comfortable hanging out in our home. I felt that this is not given enough importance. In the literature that talks about this, they don't tell you how much it costs. What's it going to cost you? Okay, so if someone lists things like this, oh, I want my kids to talk to me. I want the kids to be able to, hey, yeah, I'll take some of that. I'll take two of that. Sure. What's it going to cost you? So if you want the kids to feel comfortable, it's going to cost you an awful lot of money, right? You're going to have to buy all kinds of food. Your house is going to be a mess. You're going to lose your privacy. That's not a small thing. Those aren't small things. It's your choice, right? If you want to make it. But again, I think the literature often doesn't talk about this part, which I think is an integral part of this. So factor that in if you want it. Now, this is a biggie. If I or we want our children to talk to us about anything, it'll cost us. I would like to propose it's going to cost us a lot of aggravation. You're going to know what's going on, right? I write, this is also another Yankee line with the stars, not research. Parents who don't get it sleep better at night. Okay, right? You like that? What do you like about it? Tell me.
As the one who gets everything
from one of my kids,
right?
I know the other one just sleeps better at night.
Oh, the other spouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good thing it's not a small community where everyone knows everyone is. But good for you. No, that's the way. No, but it's true. It's true. Some parents get it. Some don't. It's true. It's absolutely true. But I say parents who don't get it sleep better at night. How's your son doing? Baruch Hashem, everything's fine. How's your hi, great, great. And I'm sitting there. You want to? Hey, want to go for a walk? I'll tell you what's going on. Okay. It takes time and energy to study best practices. You got to get outside your comfort zone very often. Turning our backs on what people say. None of these are easy. These are biggies. That's the last one was a lot less expensive. You just got to buy Nash and have a mess in the house. Getting outside your comfort zone. I told our boys when they hit mid-adolescence, you know, like whatever, 15, 16, 17, I told them that if I catch you guys drinking in a paper bag or in somebody's backyard, we're going to have a real conversation. If you want something at home, you want any beer, tell me and I'll buy it. So this is one, getting outside your comfort zone. And number two, turning your back on what people say. So I went to 7-Eleven in Muncie. There's a 7-Eleven. If you know Muncie, it's on College Road and 59, like the busiest intersection in Muncie. There's a 7-Eleven there. And for a few years, I used to walk out of 7-Eleven. The Manal Shlita, right? I was the head of the yeshiva. With the Hespe de Monad, I was still the principal. I walked out. I asked the kids, what do you want? Thursday, I would ask them, what do you want? Summer ale, get it, whatever. You know, I would literally walk out with 2 6-packs. And I'm the principal Shlita, right? And I didn't care. One of my kids, it was hysterical. One of our boys said, there's a 7-Eleven down in Spring Valley. I promise you, there's a 7-Eleven down in Spring Valley. You don't need it. You look like right in the middle of months. He wasn't embarrassed. He said, you must be embarrassed. You're the principal of the school. Like, you're walking out with beer, like having a party. And I, you know what I said? You know what I told him? I said, this is a value for me. That's what I told him. I don't want you drinking, and I'm willing to put up with this because it's important for you. And I want you to realize that. I'm glad you told me about that. I found out about that before. But it's a value. When it's a value, those two things. I had a thing. I didn't want my kids drinking. By the way, parenthetically, I asked Dr. Tversky. He told me I should not be doing that. Just for the record, Dr. Abraham Tversky, I asked him, if I know my kids are drinking, should I have them do it at home? He said, never. No, you should never do it. I adored him. He was my mentor. I learned so much from him. I told him, I love you, Rabbi, but I can't do it. And he said, you came to me. He was so humble. Oh, he's great. But that was something that I did because it was important. This is a biggie. If you make poor decisions because you're embarrassed about what the neighbors will say, it's very likely that you'll, God forbid, be much more embarrassed later down the road for much bigger issues. That's just the way it is. I wish it wasn't like that, but usually when we make fusses about things, here's a thought exercise. What would you do if you lived on a farm? Would you make a fuss about this if you lived on a farm and your nearest neighbor was a mile away? And if the answer is no, but here in the community I would, and God forbid, I'm not making value judgments, I'm just explaining the tension between the two. If you would not say anything if you lived on a farm, then you're doing it because, and the kids real, the kids know, they get it. The kids get it. Okay. Do teens really talk to their parents? Does it mean it's okay? There's no consequences. How will they ever learn right from wrong? We'll take that during Q&A, okay? So I'm gonna go through this quickly. There is actually tons of research on what makes kids disclose to parents. What are the qualities and features that parents have that make their children more likely to disclose, okay? Validation, I'm gonna show you. These are 5 studies, okay? I have a research assistant. I actually asked her to write it in plain English for me, you know? So the research shows that. That's the black, and the The blue is just in Lashon B'nai Adam, as we say, in people talk. So each of these, excuse me, I'll go through them, the other ones quickly, but these are validation, empathy, no freaking out. The kids said that. When the parents don't freak out, they're more likely to say, this is all logical. Open is closest relationships. Open is flexibility. Flexibility is also a big one. Time together as a family. Just spending time together. That's research study said that it doesn't come by itself. And trust, obligation, acceptance. So here teens open up with it. I'm going to go through it. You can look it up. You know, again, I'm sending you the PowerPoint. It's all yours. Last thing, and I'm going to open up for questions. Rabbi Dessler was a tremendous Baal Machshava, a real thinker. He was part of the very proud Muslim movement in Europe. And he wrote some books. One of the things he wrote about called Nekudas HaBechira. And I very encourage, when I talk to parents privately, I sometimes ask them when they say that they don't get the kids or that, I ask them, do you know where your child's Nekudas HaBechira? And I explained it to them. So let me explain to you quickly. That's a football field. By the way, I am incredibly impressed that so many dads are here, you know, with the Steelers playing the Ravens. I have the game here on my phone. I'm joking. That was a joke, Rabbi. No, but I'm just telling you. You ever see the rabbis they talk about something they saw on TV? The Haredi rabbis. Ever since I was in the airport, I saw a box. Eh? I thought it was a microwave. I didn't even know what's a microwave doing. You know. Anyway, so the football field is 100 yards long, but the action. Rav Dessler gives an example of war, that the war, the front is very big, but they're usually fighting, you know, over a certain area. So that box is where the action is taking place. So Rav Dessler says it's a fascinating concept. It's about personal growth, not for now, but he basically says that a person's Nekudas HaBechira, meaning where's the action? When we're born selfish and self-absorbed, you know, we're on the one-yard line, and we try to move forward, Rav Dessler says that the area, one way to see how you're doing spiritually is what tempts you and what doesn't. Like, what's your Nekudas HaBechira? At what point are you tempted? Most of us are not tempted to kill someone, right? We might be tempted to speak Lashon Hara or to take some things that don't belong to us or to be nasty to someone. So where's our Nekudas HaBechira? Rav Dessler says that we all make mistakes and we go back and forth, but one of the overall thoughts is if the ball's moving forward, if you see a Nekudas HaBechira growing and you give up certain things that don't tempt you anymore, that means you're on the right path. Okay? There's another part of that has to do with, does a person get rewarded for not doing the sin that's beneath his Nekudas HaBechira, or is it only where the Nekudas HaBechira, okay? So I find that parents and educators, if we don't get the children's Nekudas HaBechira, most of the things we tell them go right over there. So if you told your kids, don't kill anyone today, right? I don't mean this literally, but if you told them something to do that is beneath the Nekudas HaBechira, think about that, they get offended. And they also think, do you know me? Right? Do you know who I am? You're telling me this stuff? You're telling me what I should or shouldn't be doing? Do you really know me? Okay, and the same thing, it says in Halacha that you should wake up at Chatzos and when you go back home, and if you tape the football game and you go home, that'll be about Chatzos when you're done. So you're supposed to get on the floor and mourn the destruction of Jerusalem. Maybe in Tinek you have tzaddikim who do it, and most of my buddies don't, right? So if you tell somebody, if I would go to my eighth grade students when I was back when I was teaching, and I gave them a whole lecture about getting up chatzos, they said, this guy's smoking pot, like, right? So one thing I ask is think about where your children's nekudas habechira are as a way of thinking how well you know them. Because if your discussions are above or beyond that, it's generally something that they not only you think about these two things being told it leads to people believing that you don't get it, you don't get me. Like, why would I bother talking to you? Okay? Summarizing quickly, we talked about tell me anything. What can we do to engage our children in the practice of talking to us? We started to talk about what the barriers are. Now let's talk, finally, when I close it, and we're just thinking, let's talk about what can we do to eliminate the barriers. We said the kids are embarrassed. You said something different, right? You want to? They were disappointed. Don't lie to your kids. I wouldn't say I won't be disappointed. It's not true. Of course I'll be disappointed. So my wife and I told our kids, we're going to be disappointed if you say something, but we'll be way more disappointed if you weren't comfortable talking to us, because this is a value for us. Okay? If you say that they're afraid of being punished, you'll tell them, if you tell us something, there might be some consequences. Just the same thing as the Purim thing, you know? We'll talk about it. We might need to make adjustments. Maybe we'll even need you to go talk to somebody about some of the things, whatever. But it's not going to be a typical punishment like that. We're not going to unload on you. There'll be consequences if you tell us things, but we're not going to punish you in that way. Okay? You're thinking that what are some other barriers, right? You don't get it is another huge barrier. Do your best to get it. Find out what's really going on. If you see, let's say, the kids are smoking or using pot or whatever it is, find out. Look around. Find out. Are lots of kids doing it? Go to a guidance counselor in the kid's school or someone who gets it that you can talk to about it. If it has to do with electronics, I can tell you two people to go to. You know? So just think about those barriers. Why would kids not tell their parents? They don't want to be punished. They don't want to be embarrassed. You don't get it. You're going to think differently about me. So be honest with them. Say, look, I want you to be able to come to us for anything. And if there's something that's getting in the way of that, I really would like you, let's really talk about it. And give your children, think of why they wouldn't want to talk to you. Be honest with them. Don't tell them things that aren't real. They'll get it right away. And you in your heart will know that it's not real either. But have honest conversations. We told our kids that it would break our hearts. We told this to the kids growing up. And I didn't have parenting classes to go to. there weren't that many of them back then. But we told our kids that it would break our heart if you were carrying something and you felt that you couldn't talk to us about it. So talk to us about it. We'll be measured on what we do. Nobody, we're gonna, oh, confidentiality is a huge one, right? Forgot that? Are you going to tell? Who are you going to tell? And if you tell them, I can't go back to school anymore, right? So you say, unless someone's life's in danger, we will keep it confidential. So think about what any child of yours might inhibit them from discussing it with you, and feel free to. I'm going to take questions for about 10 minutes. We'll take a break, and we'll announce the night's over. The rabbi's going to give the other half of the hesped. And then, you don't have to. And then I'll stay afterwards and take some more questions, okay? So I'll stay here as long as I can stand. I'll stay here and take questions. I'll take a few now for about 10 minutes or so. We'll take a break. Whoever wants to go home, whoever has a life, feel free to go. And whoever doesn't have a life, come on up and I'll take some more questions. Okay, fire away, anything. Whatever's on your mind, guys, gals, everyone. Oh, I really explained it well. Yeah, Rabbi, go ahead.
I think for a lot of people, or I'll just say for me, it's less about, or it's both. It's the content of the conversation, but even the finding the moment to have the conversation in the first place.
Very good.
Right? For some parents, that intensity of that one-on-one conversation for the kid, sometimes it's very awkward. So even you start it in such an awkward way, so then how do you, what's some thoughts about how to have it?
Setting, that's great. Setting is great. That's great. Thank you for bringing that up. Make a note to send it and text me. I'll put it next. That's a great point. My practice is, the rabbi said that the setting is important. Time of day, even if you got upset about something, if they're cranky and if they haven't eaten yet, they haven't had dinner yet, they come home and you unload on them. You know, it's all about, timing is everything. So try to find the time that's right. You might want to, personally, I used to go for a walk with the kids. I'd say, can we go for a walk? Let's go for a walk and buy a Slurpee. Whatever, we just go out. You don't have to make eye contact. I do it with people when they come to me. Friends of mine come, whatever, to talk about stuff that they're having with the kids. It's always embarrassing. So, you know, you can do it at home. You can make a salad and call somebody over and come help me. You know, you can do it driving in a car. You don't have to, you know, think about what it's like. You know, it really bugs them out. So that's very, very important. Pick the setting, the timing. You can don't keep it going too long unless they want to stay. You might want to even tell them that if they move a water bottle somewhere, you'll stop. No, whatever. Make a sign. If it's getting heavy for you, just like they do in MMA, they'll tap you and you tap twice and you'll let them go. So all of those are, thank you, Rabbi, for bringing that up. That's really an extraordinary important point. Please.
So very often the child can be more comfortable with one parent versus the other.
Great.
So if they're more comfortable with one parent, how do you bridge that with spouses shouldn't keep
that,
secrets?
That's great. That's great. Thank you for bringing it up. The comment question was, what do you do if children are comfortable talking to one parent more than the other? We actually told our children, and we stood together and told them, listen, kids, mommy and I don't keep secrets from each other, but if you're comfortable disclosing to one of us and not the other, feel free to do so. We swear to you that we will never break your confidentiality unless you tell us it's safe to talk. We told this to our kids. And it was fascinating. Over the years, there were some things they told my wife and there were some things they told me. And I always try to find patterns. I would say in our home, which makes sense, if what they were saying required like a steel lining on your small intestine, you know, because like it's hard stuff and you don't want to, you know, the stuff they were doing that was dangerous. Because I see older, I was dealing with teens at risk for 30 years. Like, you know, yeah, it's not like dad saw everything already. He's okay. So I didn't react. I didn't react that much. So that we were more comfortable in a lot of things than we were comfortable talking to my wife about. We never did.
How did you deal with that? We
told each other. That's, you saw what I wrote about the price? That's a price you pay if you want to. It's not. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm encouraging you to think about it. Have a discussion. If you're married, talk to your spouse and decide if you want to do that. We decided to do that because I told my wife, I said, sweetheart, the kids, they're going to be more comfortable coming to me if there's heavy-duty stuff going on in their class or something that scares them. But like relationship stuff and other things like that, they were much more comfortable talking to my wife. And we really didn't. You can't lie to your kids. We did not, till they were out of the house, we never talked about it. And we made an oath. We told the children, that's how, my word is my bond. So think about it, but it's a great question, right? Yes, please.
So one of the times, you said one of the things to do is to be together as a family.
Yep.
So I'm just curious if you can give advice. Friday night dinner, to make it a positive experience instead of a freak show, because people are coming in, they're starving. Somehow, they come home from school. Somehow, they don't eat, and then you light the candles. They're starving, and you don't let them eat for another hour till Abba's home from shul. So you're already like, everyone's coming in upset.
Fantastic. Yeah. Great point. Great question. The question we didn't hear. She was talking about. What to do with Shabbat tables when things get very stressful. So I would say, maybe you want to talk to the rabbi about it, but I would certainly, if a child is really, really hungry, let him eat something. You know, ask the rabbi for a religious... the rabbi said yes. But I'm serious. That's not what you want to do. And we always look, I'm extraordinarily restless. Like, they didn't have ADHD when I was a kid, but I would have been a poster child, you know. So I can't sit for long periods of time. So it doesn't work for me. You might have kids like that. And mom called me up. I posted it on social media a year or two ago. I have a true story. Mom called me up. She said, "Oh, my 13-year-old son, every Friday night, like 20 minutes into the meal, he goes up to the bathroom for 45 minutes. What am I supposed to do?" So I said, "Do you let him leave the table if he wants to?" So she said, "In the middle of the Shabbos table? Chas v'shalom, God forbid, that we should just get up and leave." So I said, he's been in yeshiva for 60 hours this week. He found the only place he could read a book. Let him read on the couch. He won't go to the bathroom. You know, so some people don't want to do that. That's up to you guys. I'm not telling you what to do. Generally speaking, I found that every community has like 2-3 families that have these perfect Shabbat tables. My advice, don't go to their homes. I'm not going to say excommunicate them. That's a little much. But, you know, you walk into the house and you say, you go wash first. No, you go wash first. Abba, can I bring you your slippers? You know? And you go there and you say, "What am I doing wrong?" You know, and you go. So you get this guilt and you start going nuts. Rav Shlomo Valba, he's one of my, I had the privilege of, he was brilliant. It's my number one recommendation for a Jewish parenting book, is Zriya Ubinyan V'Chinuch. It's planting and building in education. Invite me back in 5 years, I'll talk about it then. But it's a whole thing to understand what he's saying, but he says that he talks about Shabbat tables specifically, and he says expecting a kid to sit at a Shabbos table for long periods of time is just makes no sense. Here's another way to think about it. And I just want to tell you, I used to take my boys to shul. My boys have my zitzfleisch, we say in Yiddish, you know. They have my personality in terms of jumping all over the place. So I would tell my kids would sit there for 2 minutes and start running around the shul. And I'll never forget it. There was a guy in front of me. He had 3 children. He said, "Zetz lecher up, sit down." And the kids would sit for 2.5 hours. They took out these books. And I said, "They're grinding Valium into this, the food there." So I promise you, I sat at the other end of the shul. I'm not joking. It used to drive me batty. So do what works for you. Here's another way to think about it, okay? Go to a school tomorrow. Imagine that you're a teacher, you're a superstar teacher, let's say, okay? A superstar teacher. Well, take a kid from 11th grade, 8th grade, 3rd grade, preschool. Put them in a room and have any conversation with them for 30 seconds. How would that work? What could you do to engage them all? It's not possible. So, just chill out. I would say, just, you know, think about it a little bit differently, if you want to, unless you want, you know. I showed you that thing, it costs stuff, you know, and I don't think it's a good idea to have children not enjoy the best family time, with sacrificing that on the altar of them saying the Dvar Torah. You know, I checked all the rabbinic sources, maybe the rabbi will overrule me on this one. I didn't see anywhere that you have to ask Parsha questions at the table. I didn't see it anywhere. You could ask them Thursday night or Sunday morning or Shabbos on the couch, you know? So, you get that analogy of taking an 11, so your 11-year-old is sitting at the table and this little kid, this cute kid of yours is saying, "Parry in pajamas in the middle of the night." The kid's saying, "Get me out of here, I'm going to hang myself," you know? So, if it works for you, great. It didn't work for us. We used to always let the kids go. In fact, I'm telling you myself, I used to serve and bust off the table because I couldn't sit. So I'm not kidding. I used to clear the table. And I told the kids, if you talk to each other and you enjoy each other's company, I'll bust, I'll clear, I'll take the table, I'll serve. I was the maitre d', the waiter. I'm not kidding, every Shabbos. So it worked for my personality, but it's not worth making a fuss about. You have a hard time with Hanukkah table? How's the Hanukkah dinner? You have trouble?
No.
Why? Because you don't have expectations.
Right?
They're not supposed to say Direi Torah. They sing dreidel, dreidel, whatever. Right? So the expectation is we're going to get together and have a great time as a family. And that's what you do. So it has to be your comfort level, but I don't think it's worth making a fuss about. How do those families that you're not going to go visit anymore do it? God bless them. I'm saying it's great for them. It works for them. It works for them. It's also, a lot of us remember when we were in seminary in Israel or in yeshiva, and you'd walk, go to this house, all adults, on their gap year where they're supposed to be getting spirituals. You walk in the house, there's 15, 20, and they're singing, and the Shekhinah is coming, and it's so beautiful, and Yerushalayim, and the stones. And so when you say, when I come home, I'm going to have a home just like that. And everybody's going to sit, and all the neighbors are going to come and say, that's so beautiful, it's so nice, and it's beautiful. And then you say, I'm worthless, none of this happened, you know. Thanks a lot. Bring 20 adults to your house, you'll have a good time. All right? Okay, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much for listening. We'll take a 5-minute break, and I'm going to take off my jacket, get comfortable. If anyone's watching the game, let me know what happened. And we got grandkids in Baltimore. So we'll take a break, and I'll come 5 minutes. I'll take some more questions. Okay. Thank you very much for listening, guys. my social media, everything of mine is at Yaakov Horowitz. If you're interested. Okay. Thank you.
It's me, Bruckner.
It's me,
Bruckner.
Some welcome.
You know
your father.
Ashi.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
You know.
You don't recognize my face.
Yeah.
I got a little fatter, but yeah.
Good to see
you.
You
look teenage.
That's so nice.
20 years, 25 years. Yeah.
I didn't know. Very nice.
We're in Israel now. Yeah. Nice seeing you. Thank you.